You're listening to the Monthly Money Makeover podcast, where Maya and Mapalo talk to the EBSA advisors and their contestants about their six-month Money Makeover bootcamp. You can also follow the journey with City Press, You Magazine, as well as Facebook at CP Money Makeover. This is our fourth Money Makeover podcast. And in this podcast, we're focusing on property investing because this is the challenge that faced one of our candidates, Colin. So what I wanted to do today is a little bit different from our normal podcasts. I wanted to share with you a Facebook Live interview I did with Michael Martens from EBSA Home Loans. Michael's been working with Colin and giving him some advice. And what I really love about Michael is that apart from being obviously a finance expert working for a bank, he's also a property investor himself. So a lot of the information and advice that he gave on the Facebook Live interview, I felt was really, really worth sharing with my podcast audience. And I've also kept on the questions that were posed by our followers on Facebook and the responses that Michael gave. And I really urge you to listen to the podcast in full if you're interested in investing in property, because it was just some really, really great advice that came through.
But when Colin joined Money Makeover, he was really getting himself into quite a lot of property debt, should I say. So he has five properties that he's taken on. And he just said he was starting to kind of the cash flow was becoming a really big problem. And he was finding that he was having to finance some of that from his personal finances, which was putting strain on his household finances. And he kind of felt like his property was a little bit all over the place. And when I spoke to Michiel for the first time, who's been working with Colin, Michiel's response to me was, Colin has fallen into property by accident. And I think, Michiel, this is such a, it was a statement that really resonated with me, because I find that with so many people who invest, I find that whether it's property or share investing or any investing, they kind of get into things because they heard about it at a braai or a friend told them, and there's never a cohesive plan. There's never a strategy about how this investment's going to work for you, what the outcome is going to be. And so we often enter these things without a clear plan. And that was the first thing you said to Colin. You said, what is your plan? So, Michiel, I'm going to hand over to you about the importance of having that, I think you call it the smart 15-year plan.
Yeah. Thanks, Maya. So happy to be here. And really good to share some thoughts with you and the viewers as well. So maybe just give you some background. As you said, I work with EBSA Home Loans, and I specifically focus on the investor segment within the home loan market. And being an investor myself and speaking to investors on a regular basis, I'm able to work with my team, I extend the teams, and we try to come up with great solutions for investors and ultimately help them to get into the property investment space and grow their portfolio. And when I sat with Colin, I saw so much in where he was, not just in myself and my journey, but also with so many other investors I speak to regularly. And the comment about falling into it by accident, it's really about, it comes down to seeing the opportunity and taking advantage of the opportunity in that particular property. But when you start thinking about where you want to be, and we talk about a 15-year plan, and some people, 15 years seems like a very long time. Property is really about a marathon and not a sprint, although it's made up of a lot of short sprints as you take up those different opportunities. If you understand where you want to be in the long term and where you want to invest, so it might be a buy to let, it might be flipping, where you renovate and sell houses or properties, or it might be about being invested in a particular market. That might be Johannesburg, it might be Cape Town, it might be more in the tourism market, etc. It's about having that plan, and then really aligning all your individual actions and your individual purposes around that plan. And what many investors, where they find themselves is that their first apartment actually becomes their first investment. As they move from their first property into their second property, that first property becomes an investment. And then they are traveling the country and they come across another property, and it's a great buy, and it's a great area, and they take it up. And in itself, those aren't bad investments. But further down the line, when you have a handful of properties and now you are managing this portfolio where your properties are 100 kilometers apart, you start seeing how it starts draining your time and requiring extra expense and management, lettings agents, friends to go and check in, all sorts of different models that people have to employ just to manage and keep their portfolio profitable. And having that larger goal and having a larger plan of where you'd like to be and then aligning your decisions around that will ultimately benefit in the long run.
You know, Gil, I want to make this point. It was in the article that we published about Colin, but you picked up. So Colin really, his properties are all over the place. Like you said, 100 kilometers apart. He spends a fortune on petrol and on time. And your question to him was, where do you want to live in the future? Not now, like where is your retirement plan kind of thing? Where from here? And he said he wants to farm in the Free State. And you said, well, maybe what you need to start looking at is properties in the area that you plan to be in. So it's also about trying to have some idea of where you want to end up.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, when people start out in their journey in their 20s, early 30s, they don't necessarily have that view. But as it starts emerging, as they're sort of getting a view on where and then how you'd like your portfolio to be, you really need to start aligning yourself. And Cardinal, you know, when I asked him about that, he said, Miguel, I would really like to be farming in the Free State. That's his aspiration. And immediately I said, well, have you considered maybe Bloemfontein? If your properties are all in cities and that kind of environment, then it's not about necessarily selling off existing properties. That has other considerations. But as you grow and as you purchase new properties, and maybe consider Bloemfontein as an investment hub. Maybe look at the student accommodation apartments that are available in that area, etc. But rather find something that's manageable close by, or at least set yourself up to be able to manage a portfolio across diverse regions.
And also, Michael, I thought it was interesting for me where you identified with him that now I've gone completely a train of thought as you were saying about the properties. That was the other thing, is you were talking about the use of the property. Like, so, you know, is it going to be rental income? Is it going to be student accommodation? And you also picked up that he had this plot of land that was just sitting there. And you were saying that is like a really big no-no in a property portfolio.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the first rules is that buy property that generates income. Now, land can be bought fairly cheaply. Land always requires development, and it requires turning that rough stone into a diamond that actually gives you that rental inflow. And in his case, and it's not a comment against investing in land. There's many opportunities for that. But I think what he found in his case was that he had bought this piece of land. I forget where it was at the stage, but he bought this piece of land and intended to develop on it, build the house, I think it was. And then he had gone on to other things. And now that land was sitting there. He's paying rates and taxes on that piece of land. He's still having to secure that piece of land. And he had financed that piece of land. At the moment, this really is a negative cash flowing property investment. And my thoughts to him is, you need to think about whether you are going to develop the land and create that positive cash flow, or whether you might be thinking about doing something different with that piece of land.
So, I mean, you obviously discussed with Colin his plans, where he's want to be in 15 years' time, how the properties he's investing are going to work towards that. But then you also told him that he needed to put a power team in place. And I thought this was quite an interesting concept. Talk to me a little bit about this power team that you believe we should have.
Absolutely. So as you can imagine, as you go through the property investment cycle, you need to find a great property. You need to put an offer and finance that property. You need to renovate or redevelop that property, and then you need to manage that property. So as I mentioned, those different phases, you need to get a great estate agent or a couple of estate agents that partner with you, understand your needs and what you're looking for, and become your eyes and ears in terms of opportunities on the ground. You then need to get a lawyer who works with you on putting your offer to purchases together, and the legalities around that. Then I think it's finding a great banker, and whether that's an originator who goes to various banks for you, or whether you actually find a banker with a particular bank that understands you and is able to help you structure your applications and your property portfolio so as to be able to maximize the financing that you'll get from the bank. Following that, as you get the property, a good investor will buy a low value property that probably needs a little bit of work to really to realize the value that's within that property. You probably need a team that can do anything from paint a couple walls to fix any structural aspects, etc. And you really want to get that team together. That team will also double up as maintenance when you need a plumber, electrician, and especially in Colin's scenario, where he might be 200 kilometers away from a property that has a leaking, that has a burst pipe. He needs to be able to call a plumber very quickly and have them on site the same day, or else that leaking pipe just creates so much damage. Following that, having a good lettings agent, or and then of course a tax accountant, who can really ensure that you are benefiting and structuring yourself for tax. I think that covers it. But it's really putting yourself having those specialists available to you. It comes at a cost, but you really got to balance that cost of having those specialists and the advice I'll give you, versus you going along yourself, the time cost of that takes you away from your normal day-to-day business, or the opportunities that present themselves that you don't have access to, as well as the benefit that they'll give you from their specialism.
And I know, Michael, when you and I were chatting as well, and it's a discussion you've had with Colin, is around, and this comes back to that team of specialists, it's around how, when you start buying your property, you reach a point where you realize this thing's all sitting in your name. And that's going to have a lot of consequences. It's got tax consequences. It's got estate duty consequences. So one of the decisions you're going to have to make is whether to put these properties into a structure. And that could be a trust or a company. And I think your comment to me was, you know what, it depends who you talk to as to which structure they're going to talk about. So, for example, a trust is very much around estate duty, longevity, perhaps leaving the properties to your children, and protecting it from creditors is a couple of reasons. Whereas the company could be a lot more tax efficient, it may have other benefits, and that's what you said. Also, speak to all your team members and make the decision ultimately yourself.
Absolutely. You, as an investor, you need to be responsible for firstly identifying where you want to be, your 15-year plan, and then getting the advice from the specialist that will help you get there. And ultimately, advice, even if it's paid for advice, you still have to make the decision because you carry the weight and the outcomes of that decision. So speak to an accountant. So if you think of going and purchasing your properties within a PTY, within a trust structure, or even your own name, there are many different reasons why you'd want to do either one of those three. Definitely understand what the tax implications would be currently and in the future. From an estate duty perspective, understand what would be the best setup, given on your passing, that you reduce your tax your estate duty liability, but also you leave that asset to your beneficiaries. Also, from a protection perspective, you might want to put those assets in a separate entity that is outside yourself. If you're concerned with your assets being attached for whatever reason. So there are many reasons why one would want to do that. Really dependent on each person's situation. And the frustrations I felt in the past that as I spoke to my accountant, my lawyer, a trust attorney, etc., and even other investors, I got very different points of view. And I had to really take those, consider those, do my own research, and make my own considered decision. What we try and do, just to back to the AFSA home loan side, with our investors, we have as part of our buy-to-let proposition, we try to put some of that power team together for our investors. So with APSA Home Loans, we've got a partnership with TPN, and TPN help landlords who manage their own property portfolios with listing their tenants' credit payment profile on their credit bureau. So one thing that many tenants don't get the benefit of is they pay their rents every month, but they don't get the benefit of having of that very positive payment behavior on a credit bureau, and TPN does it. TPN also helps when tenants start missing their payments with a process to encourage them to get back on track, and also with the beginning of the legal process to deal with default TPN. So TPN is a great partner to have.
Yeah. I must say, Michiel, I think we did actually mention them as well in the article, because they also have provided for free documents. So if your tenant is unable to pay at the moment because of COVID, that there's a structured agreement. So they're definitely a very good, I think, good partner. Now, we've spoken about the plan. We've spoken about the power team. Now we get to like using your home loan structures to be able to grow your portfolio, because there's a lot of very important things that you need to consider. Like, do I have the debt in the primary property? Do I have it on the secondary property? How do I use my home loans to really be able to grow my property portfolio? And I think you're definitely the right person to answer that question.
Yeah. So home loan is not just a home loan. I think home loan can be used for so many different purposes, and it's a mechanism to help. It can be a mechanism to help you grow your portfolio. So at the outset of taking up a home loan, you need to consider whether you want a 20-year or a 30-year loan. Of course, a 30-year loan reduces your monthly payments, but ultimately is more expensive. And you need to consider whether that's the right feature for you to use. In addition, make sure that when you take up a home loan, that you have the opportunity to put any cash, any additional cash into the home loan. And that can be cash that an investor pulls together from a sale or from any other purpose, but they need to park somewhere whilst they wait for the next investment opportunity. So put that into your flexi reserve, and then the funds that are put into your home loan's flexi reserve reduce the interest that you pay on that home loan. And then as an investor builds their portfolio, a property that was bought at 700,000 Rand is now worth 1 million Rand, investors can now and go in and withdraw that additional equity, that 300,000 Rand value that the property is now appreciated by. And using a further advance, investors can pull that out of an investment property and use that 300,000 Rand towards another purpose, and in this case, towards another investment property. The one thing they need to take into consideration is that by doing that, their monthly loan payments will increase, and they need to do their sums up front to ensure that the rent being achieved and that the overall affordability can still handle that increased rental, increased cost. One thing about property investment is it comes down to the number. As soon as the investor's feeling is making decisions based on gut feel, on emotions, because they like the view, they need to be very careful. It comes down to the numbers. Down the number. Is there demand for this property I'm looking at in the area? Is the rental, have I done my research on the rental that I can expect to achieve in this area? And what are my costs going to be, whether it's my home loan costs, my levies, my maintenance?
Yeah, I think Michiel, such a good point. I think a lot of people buy property. Buy property emotionally. That's probably a big problem. We've got a lot of questions coming in. So I thought maybe we can go to and if there's this one from Beryl that fits in really, really nicely with what we've spoken about how to use the home loan. So Beryl is, let me read the question. So Beryl's looking to buy another property. She already has two properties. She lives in Daveyton. I think that's her primary residence. And she owes about 97,000 still on that home loan. She's got about 6 years more to go on it. And she has, you know, she has been putting in funds ahead. So she's been prepaying. So she actually has about 17,000 Rand that she could actually just access as part of the access bond. Then she has a rental property in Boksburg, which she receives 6,200 Rand a month from. And the mortgage is only 5.7. So she's actually in the money on that one. She now has identified another investment property for 635,000 Rand. Her question is, she's actually got the $97,000 that she could use should she pay off the Davyton house completely, property where she's living, or should she use some of that as a deposit to start her for the next investment property? Again, this is, again, about, I suppose, juggling finance. What would you, what are the things she should consider?
Oh, that's a fantastic question, and it's so fortunate that Beryl is in a place to have options. And I think as investors, we want options. We want to know what we can do. But sometimes too many options becomes a challenge. So it comes back down to the numbers. So the first thing I would do is, Beryl, what is your 15-year plan? What is your 5-year plan? If Beryl's plan is to build a property portfolio, and that she wants to achieve a certain rental income, then she needs to be clear on how far she is away she is from that. So if Beryl's definitely on that growth trajectory, then that's step number one. What is the plan? Step number two is do the numbers. Do the numbers on the current property. Understand the rentals, the outgoings. You mentioned that she's in the money in her Boxburg property, but I think that very rough calculation probably didn't include the levies and the additional costs that she's probably incurring on that property.
So that
might eat away at the expected rental income that's been achieved there. So understanding where you are today is the first step. The second step is then doing the same calculation on a different piece of paper or on your computer and understanding, if I had to purchase this next property, how would that add to the portfolio I already have? So if she's going to be taking money out of a bond on the first property to fund the third property, then the calculations on the first property are going to change. The question is, does that property start cash flowing negatively? And if it does the third property have sufficient positive cash flow to offset the first one? So it's doing a what if, starting understanding where you are and running the numbers in terms of the options that are available to you. And then maybe a last one is, I think it's so important to get other people, other investors around you. Find other investors who, whether family, friends, and ideally just investors who are in the market, and start having these conversations with those investors, not just to necessarily find other opportunities, etc., but really to soundboard some of these options and thoughts and get their view before you make your own decision.
And one of the other things is, and I don't know how one looks at it, but there is obviously the tax implications of where your debt sits, because the interest on a mortgage is tax deductible from your rental income. So how important would that be as well?
Oh, absolutely. So it's very easy. It's easy to put your monthly cash flow together, but it's key to understand that even if a calculation results in you having a positive cash flow, you're making money, it's great. Have you considered the tax implication? What from that will the tax man take? And in some cases, what looks like a positive cash flow can become a negative cash flow at the end of the year when the tax man comes to collect. And that's where having an accountant on standby to ask the questions and to go to understanding is so valuable. What I often find, Maya, is that these specialists that I referred to go and have an hour consultation from them is often done at no cost. They want to understand you and your need, and you need to see if they will fit you and your needs. And often having your first consultation is often at no cost. But then free advice is exactly that. It's free, and it's not always the best advice. And so be willing to pay for good advice. But and then once you've got an accountant, an attorney who you go to more regularly, then to really pop off an email, build that relationship where you can ask them these simple questions. My experience that most accountants, attorneys, eviction lawyers, builders and contractors will be happy to give you their point of view, because they know that they have built a relationship with you and that there's a business relationship going forward.
I think I remember you saying to me as well, Michiel, when you were chatting about Colin, you said, you've got to treat this as a business. This is a business. When you have property portfolio, it's actually a business. And like you, if you bought a shop to something, you would need all these people. And I think that seems to me where the disconnect comes. People think they do it all on their own, and then they land up with a bit of a remorse and then trying to undo all of that. So I think that's probably good advice. I just want to go on to a question. I thought it was actually quite a very good question. You know, you spoke about looking for investment properties. And it says, where would one find good data or info on areas and suburbs where property growth is booming? So how do you find that investment, I suppose?
Oh, wow. That's a great question and a very, very tough question. So I'm really a believer in picking an area or picking a couple areas and getting to know them. And really, I think very analytically, a lot of analysis can go into finding those areas. But really get to know the areas around you, or get to know areas that you've started getting a sense of where the value and the value of the property to purchase and the rentals to achieve could work for where you want to go with your portfolio. Mm-hmm. So get a sense, buy the papers, look on the likes of private property for the rentals and the values, and that should give you a very good sense for where those are for you. And then this is where our partners at TPN are key. The TPN has a fantastic report that anyone can pull. It's called a suburb report. And for that particular suburb, and there's a fee for the report, but that's not a significant fee. For that report, on that report, you can pull what the average values were for purchases in that area, what the average rental in that area is for 1, 2, and 3 bedroom apartments or housing. You can even pull what the average payment profile is in that area. At the moment, where in the media we hear how tenants are under pressure and tenant payments have dropped off, etc. That's a current issue. TPN's suburb report gives you that insight for that particular area, and it helps you to start to fine tune your calculations and refine which which areas you want to invest in. But beyond that, it's great to do the analysis. It's great to have all that reporting to rely on. But ultimately, you make your money when you buy. Make sure that the property you're purchasing is at the value that will support the calculations that will give you ideally a positive cash flowing investment property. Make sure that you're buying a property that you had inspected, that it doesn't have any structural defects, damp, etc., that you haven't necessarily budgeted for to fix. So ultimately, you can do the analysis, but make sure that when you're looking at that property, that supports the numbers that you are chasing.
And it's all about the numbers. And I love the way you say you make your money when you buy your property. And share investing, I think Warren Buffett's the most famous who said that about shares. You make your money on the value you pay for it in the beginning. Donald's asked, now this is a very good question actually, talking about trust, how do you transfer your properties? Can you see the questions up there, Michiel? How do you transfer your properties from his name into a trust, and how much does it cost?
Oh my goodness. I don't actually have those exact details. It really depends on the property, the transfer fees, etc. What I can add is that when you transfer from your own name into a trust, it's often considered an effective sale, and there may be capital gains tax and other tax implications. So before doing that, definitely get the right advice. Again, often this is an easily answered question by an attorney. Even a state agent might be able to give you a good answer, but it really comes down to what your strategy is.
Well, I would say, because I mean, obviously you've got you've got possible capital gains, and then there could be transfer duty, although if the property's under $1 million, you don't pay transfer duty. So in this current property market where values have just collapsed, now would be the time, wouldn't it? Because a lot of those costs of moving into a trust are going to be the two. So there you are, Donald. If you're going to do it, use the bad property market to do it, because you probably get a lower valuation on all of those things.
Yeah. And as I speak to investors every day, you know, everyone's going on about how this is the time to buy, the great bargains out there, etc. I would suggest this is a time for caution. This market is fluctuating, and if the property that was $1 million going for $1 million 3 months ago is now down to 800,000, that might sound like a bargain. But if the overall market is down to that level, that might be the new market value point. I'm not suggesting that's the case or everywhere, but just be careful and run the numbers. And if we think there are opportunities now, those opportunities will still be around for quite some time, the next year or so, year or two. So make the decisions, back them up the numbers, and go in there. And understand that there's always risk involved, always risk involved. And ultimately, you as the investor sit with that risk. Also the rentals, where we thought rentals, where rentals were 3 months ago, now with the tenants being an incredible affordability challenges, income challenges, unemployment is set to increase, etc. Ensure that the rentals you're putting into your sums are actually achievable and they are sustainable. So often when there's so much uncertainty, we are often frozen, and we don't make those decisions. And as I refer to sums and do your calculations, I'm not suggesting getting to an analysis paralysis, but definitely have those to help you take advantage of the right opportunities in the market.
I think, Michiel, that's such an interesting point you were saying about don't just buy it because you think it's a bargain. Now, I'm getting a lot of questions from people saying, is this time to move into property? And I think what you're saying is don't look at the price. Look at the cash flow. Don't, you know, understand that just because it's gone from $1 million to 800 doesn't necessarily make it a better investment. And this actually brings me to Pamela's question. So Pamela's question was, this is for her personal capacity. She's buying a property. And she said she's feeling like the estate agent's rushing her a lot, saying, this is a bargain. This is a bargain. You must sign now. And then she was told that she needs to have at least 34,000 Rand put aside for the lawyer fees and all of this. And she's feeling a little overwhelmed right now by the sales process. So what advice would you give or recommendations would you give to Pamela in this situation?
No. So I think to trust her gut. If she's feeling that she's been pushed into the deal, I think what her gut is telling her is that she hasn't necessarily considered the full ramifications of going through the deal. What I've found and what I suggested to investors, and the strategy I've followed myself, is rather go through a dozen deals, rather go through the walk through it, run the numbers, understand up front what the price was, what the transfer fees will be, what the full costs will be, what deposits will the bank require from you, and what cash you need to have available over the next couple of weeks or month to be able to support that. Because if a deal falls through after the bank has provided the final grant, you might still have attorney's fees that are liable for, and possibly even agent's commission. So make sure that you have clear line of sight of the fees that you will be asked, even if you have to make that as a condition on your offer to purchase, that you have those fees provided to you upfront before the purchase continues. So I think one thing good about Pamela is that she's trusting her gut and she's asking this question.
I know. I think, Michiel, you were also saying to me previously that, which I actually didn't know, is that if on most sale agreements, it's the condition is that you qualify for financing. Once that has been met, you are obliged, the sale is obliged to go through. So if you default because suddenly you don't have the money for the transfer fees and for the attorneys, you still have to pay the agent's commission because it's effectively been a sale. Well, you've met that, you're in breach of contract.
This is why having an attorney that you can share that offer to purchase with, just review it and give you their views on all the implications of soaking as one of your power teams. So that can be the case. Offer to purchases are written very differently by different estate agents. You can even provide your own offer to purchase that provided by your own attorney. You don't have to use the one provided by the estate agent. But I think you're very clear on what becomes due when and at what point in time. And often those very lengthy offer to purchases have all sorts of clauses that this date is not reached. If the seller or the buyer fails to comply, then there could be costs and damages attached to them. That's absolutely important and worth going through that. The lengthy document is administrative, but get an attorney or someone who's been through the process several times just to go through it and discuss it. Whenever you feel pressure to move forward on such a big transaction, my first sense is to take a step back. No deal is that good that it requires immediate action.
Very good advice. Mandy's asked an excellent question, actually, because maybe you spoke earlier about the equity in your property. So maybe you bought the property for 700, but it's now worth $1 million. You now want to go and extract that equity. How does the bank look at your affordability? Because there's two different measures here. One is the equity in your property, but the other is whether you can afford that 300,000 additional bond.
No, so it's exactly the same. So when you first came and took out that bond, we would have assessed you for your affordability to be able to manage the payment on the 750,000. We would have checked your credit score to see how you'd manage your payments for other credit lines, as well as the value of the property to ensure that that 750,000 was adequate for the value of the property. When it comes to doing a further advance and extracting, what you're doing is effectively increasing the 750,000 to $1 million. And as opposed to paying the proceeds off to the seller, you now actually the proceeds come to yourself from that increased loan. The same process is followed. The bank will request that your affordability is assessed, that you can afford the monthly costs that come with the 1 million rand loan, that you have been managing to stick with your commitments with other credit requirements, so you've got a good credit score, and then that the property value can stand behind a million rand loan. If I'm taking a million rand loan when the property is really only worth 800,000, then your cap is really that 800,000. And of course, you might not be able to take the full million. There might still be an LTV cap, a loan to value cap. So the bank might only provide you 80, maybe 90% of the full value of the property. But it really does come through to putting that application in, having that discussion with the bank, and seeing where you stand at that point in time.
And one of the problems I also find is that people often do this because they want to buy a rental property, but the bank will not consider that rental income until it actually exists. So you can't say, I'm buying this property, so I'm going to get 5,000 rand a month from it, so I'm going to add that to my affordability or to my income. They say, no, until you're receiving 5,000 rand a month, we can't consider it. And I think that's also, people don't realize they have to qualify for that investment property initially on their own salary and their own affordability.
Well, so there's actually something to share with you there. So you're right. The banks will, on your first purchase, the banks will look at you and your earnings and the salary you earn to see what your affordability is, right? Once you're buying your next property, you can then use the rental that you're achieving currently, to your point, that you're already achieving, to add to your personal income. And the bank looks at that in totality for affordability. All banks do that, right? The banks won't take the full rental into consideration. They'll take a portion of that, and then different banks take a different haircut on that rental income. But at APSA 2 years ago, we launched what we call future rental income. The future rental income is only for investors who currently have two properties of their own. So they can be their own property, the property they live in, and a second investment property. And it doesn't have to be with APSA, it can be anywhere. But as long as you can demonstrate that you, as an investor, know how to manage the loan payments, the expenses, and of course the rental and the tenant that comes with managing investment property. So if you have those two properties already in your name or in your PTY trust, when it comes to your third property, you can add the future rental expected to be earned on that third property to your affordability. The reason we designed this was because what we found was that investors were getting to two properties and then were hitting a glass ceiling, and they were effectively running out of affordability. And then they had to slow down, stop, and wait for rentals to increase or income to increase, as well as loans to be paid down before they could look at their next property. The future rental income allows them to actually grow their portfolios without having to wait for them.
Okay, well, I see Sabello asked a question. It was actually, ironically, I've just actually answered that. It was exactly about that. How does ABSA look at it? And I think back to Beryl's question right in the beginning about the third property. So this third property, if she came to ABSA, you would consider the rental that she's currently getting from her existing property and the future income that she could make on the new investment. So that's actually something I did not know. So that's good.
Absolutely. So Beryl will then add the fact that, let's call your argument's sake, she would add that she expects to earn 6,000 Rand a month from that third property she's purchasing. We would then go into the market and look at, and we use our partners at TPN. We look at what the average rentals are being achieved for two-bedroom apartments in the area she's looking at. And then we do a formula that takes into consideration vacancies and a couple other factors. And then we take a portion of that 6,000 Rand. And the portion is anything from about 50% to 65% of that, depending on the area. So investing in the areas that have lower vacancy rates or better good standing ratios, we'll get a higher percentage. So your area is important. And then based on that, we'll be able to augment your affordability to consider that new investment. So it's a great little feature. ABSA is the only one that does it, and we're still doing it in this market. Having said that, I had a virtual table discussion with our credit managers yesterday, and the question I had for them is, are we still open for business? Are we still in the market? Are we still financing homeowners and investing? And it was a vehement yes. ABSA is still very much in the market, although we will be scrutinizing applications more so than before. We want to ensure that the applicant can absolutely afford the property and the financing that they're taking up. We want to make sure that they're not getting themselves into trouble. And it's as much protecting the applicant as well as it is protecting the bank when it comes to extending financing. But it's still very much in the market.
Mm. And just a quick question on that. Another one I'm getting a lot of questions on is about whether or not to fix your interest rate. Because interest rates are so low right now, is this the time to go and quickly fix them?
Oh my goodness, that's such an interesting question. So that's a big debate, and I'm on various investor platforms on Facebook, and that comes up quite often. So it really comes down to where you think interest rates are going to go. So if you feel that interest rates are going to shoot up within the next year or two, then you probably want to fix your rates. So when you fix your rates, you don't fix your rates at your current variable rate. Inevitably, different banks work differently, but inevitably, each bank will add a percentage on top of your current rate. So if you're sitting at 7.5% at the moment, you can go and fix your rate for anything from 1 year to 5 years, and let's take 3 years as an example. You could be adding on an extra 1.5 or 2% on top of the rate you're paying today. Okay, it will depend on market values. So when you request a fixed rate, we actually go and fund that fixed rate in the market, and that additional margin actually comes from the funding in the market. It's actually market related. Banks don't necessarily make additional funds on that fixed rate. And this is why when we fix that rate now for the next 3 years and we've added on, let's say for argument sake, 1.5% on top of what was the example he used, was it 7%? Now you're paying 8.5%. You're paying 8.5% no matter where those rates go. So if the rates stay where they are today, you will immediately be paying more for your loan. But you obviously do it because you expect the rates within the next 3 years to go well above 8.5%, so that you can actually reclaim the benefit of it. It really does come down to where you think rates are going to go. Be very clear that to get out of a fixed rate, there is a penalty interest that is charged. And that penalty interest is really to unwind the fixed funding that the bank has had to go and obtain in the market for you. It's not an additional source of income for the bank. It's really to go and unwind it. So there is a significant interest rate penalty that is put against it. But another way of thinking about an alternative to fixed rate is that one would go and take fix that rate yourself, make that payment yourself, and put those funds that you would have otherwise paid, put them into a separate account, or even put them into the home loan. And if at 7%, if you're paying on R1 million, you're paying roughly 7,000 a month. At 8.5%, you might be paying closer to 8,500 a month, right? So, or maybe something like that. Put that additional R1,000 aside that you would have paid, and put that possibly into your home loan, and then, as in that way, you get the benefit of the lower interest rates when they come through, but then you also have additional funding to access when you're dealing with increasing rates. Mm-hmm. So that is one form of basically doing fixed rate yourself. But it really does come down to the individual. They really have to look at where their outlook is on interest rates. And I've gone and tried to look at some forecasts in the market and interest rates. Well, I might as well get onto Monte Cassino and put some money on red, because who knows where interest rates are going to go. It's a tough one. There's really no certainty at the moment in the market.
What I've been saying to people is, you were paying 275 basis points more in January than you are now. So just keep those payments the same. That's effectively like fixing your rate. But all that additional money you're going to the bank is actually going to your capital and reducing your capital. So if you could afford the house in January, you know you can afford it in 3 years' time. You can afford it at any time, unless interest rates exceed the 2.75% increase. So I think I think people need to think about that, using this opportunity really of these low rates to rather increase their payments than fixing. One more question, I think, before we'll need to sign off. Perhaps it's a little unfair question for you, because you're not a tax, you're not pretending to be a tax expert, but I have a flat that I'm about to pay off. How can I make sure the rental income does not increase my personal income tax? Well, you probably have to buy another property or something, because it is going to increase your income tax. Because obviously you've been able to deduct the interest up till then.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, so sure, that is so dependent on each person's individual tax situation. Property and property investment definitely does impact your tax liability, your tax structure. And there are ways to create tax efficiencies from property investment and rentals received. I think that's definitely a question. It's a great question, and it's definitely a question that you can go and pose to an accountant and get their view on that. Sometimes what I find, the biggest opportunity for someone who has a property investment, who even has a small portfolio of 3 or 4 apartments, is that if they just structure things differently, if they move their lending around a little bit, there's a lot of tax efficiency to be gained from it. But it has to be done correctly, and it has to be done with the advice of the professionals.
Mm-hmm. And I think and we also had that question, just to end off, we had someone asking the difference between a trust and a PTY in terms of tax and estate duty. And I think that's one of those questions you'd have to look at. Yeah. So if you are... The company tax rate is 28%. So if you're a 40% taxpayer and you put the properties in your PTY, your tax rate comes down to 28%. Whereas in a trust, of course, if you sell the properties, you're taxed at maximum capital gains, but it's safe from creditors. And on death, the trust stays alive, so there's no state duty. So there's a lot of moving parts to it. And I think Colin actually jumped on this as well, our actual candidate. And he's asked, you know, I don't know what, like, how do you handle this conflicting information? And I think you've got to, it is part of having that plan. What is this for?
Absolutely.
What are my plans? And then working the team around that and the correct structure around your plan. There's no one answer.
Absolutely. And I think we go back to exactly where we started. Understand where you want to be or where you think you want to be. Start with the end in mind. And then from that, that'll determine the types of properties that you invest in, whether it is residential, commercial, but residential, whether it's sectional title, whether it's freehold. Do you want one bedrooms? Do you want flats? Are you looking at more retirement investment? Investing for retirement apartments, or you're looking for more student accommodation, where you look at bachelor units, maybe one bedrooms around your varsities. Are you looking more for to let out to corporates? So you want to be around the CBDs and have in estates that have great facilities where a corporate will really appreciate that and value that and pay you rent for that. It really starts with that with an end in mind. And based on that, it'll help you identify what kind of properties you invest in. It'll help identify whether you're going to have a portfolio of two properties or 20 properties, and then whether you have whether you have those in your own name, in a trust, a PTY structure, etc. And also determine how much you invest in your knowledge. This comes down to, you know, property investment is not a secret. There is a lot of knowledge to be gained out there, a lot of books to be read, a lot of podcasts, webinars, a lot
Facebook
of media.
Facebook
Lives, exactly, to access that will continually just keep on growing your property knowledge. Initially, it feels very overwhelming. Take time. Property investing is not a sprint. It's not, you know, what am I going to do in May 2020? It's about really take the time, invest in yourself and your knowledge first, and then go out there and put your hard-earned cash into a property investment and start building from there.
So that's a wrap for today. If our listeners would like to learn more about these or any money-related topics, they can go to the City Press website or to your website,
womanandfinance.co.za,
or my website, mayaonmoney.co.za.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a WhatsApp voice note to 064-554-3959. And we look forward to hearing from you.
Because we want to know what it is that you want to know. You've been listening to the My Money, My Lifestyle podcast, featuring the contributors of the City Press Personal Finance Pages.